Welcome to today's Sippy Cast entitled Sippy STEM Fellows, a Unique Opportunity. My name is Dr. Elizabeth Hawthorne, co-principal investigator of the ATE project entitled Community College Presidents Initiative in STEM Education. It is my pleasure to serve as today's moderator. The webcast is being recorded for placement on our website at sippystem.org, along with our other 9 Sippy Cast episodes. The presentation slides are also available on our website. In a minute, I'll put the link to the slides so that you will have those. Okay, while we are waiting to get started in just a few minutes, please make sure your audio is muted and you type your name and affiliation in the Zoom chat box if you have not done so already. Throughout the presentation and at the end, we will pause for you to type any questions into the Zoom chat box. The questions will be read aloud for our presenters to answer. We ask that you please hold all questions until these designated times. So let me go ahead and put the link in the chat where you can get the slides to today's presentation. They're already out there, and then the recording will also be there. Okay. All right. So without further ado, we're going to get started. Speakers. We have Dr. Ashok Agarwal, who is coordinator of the SIPPY STEM Fellows Program. And we have 4 distinguished SIPPY Fellows with us today to have a wonderful conversation. We have DD Griffith, who is Vice President of Workforce Development at Temple College in Texas. We have Emily Halverson-Otts, Dean of Sciences at Pima College in Arizona. We have Jason Beam, who's a faculty member and also interim dean of science, technology, engineering, mathematics at St. Louis Community College in Missouri, and Allison Foster, assistant professor of anatomy and physiology at Columbus State Community College in Ohio. And as I said, I'm serving as today's moderator. I'm Dr. Elizabeth Hawthorne. I'm a co-principal investigator of SIPPY STEM and a senior professor emeriti of computer science and cybersecurity. So today's topics, we're going to do a brief overview of the SIPPY STEM initiative. Then we'll have a wonderful conversation with our 4 SIPPY STEM fellows from both cohorts. And then Dr. Agarwal will go over how to apply to the fellows program if you're interested. And there's a link right there in case you want to read about anything. It's all on our website. So let me just briefly tell you about our initiative. So SIPPY STEM focuses on advancing STEM workforce education and promoting the National Science Foundation Advanced Technological Education Program. And one of our co-principal investigators, Dr. Charlene Dukes, just joined the Zoom room. If you would like to say a few words, Dr. Dukes.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you so much, Dr. Hawthorne. I want to thank Dr. Agarwal and the CCPI STEM Fellows for what they're going to share with you today. As you all are likely aware, this is a National Science Foundation Advanced Technological Education Program, and we are delighted to work with community colleges across the nation, divided up into what we refer to as regional networks, as we begin to continue to identify ways in which community colleges can support the ever-growing STEM workforce, particularly in the technical skills area. So we're delighted you're here with us. We are excited to hear from our STEM fellows, and I'm sure that you'll just be amazed and blown away by what they share, and also give you the opportunity to consider if you might like to join us in this endeavor. So thank you very much, Dr. Hawthorne, and I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you, Dr. Dukes. So you can read the key initiatives. Dr. Dukes gave you a nice overview, but what we're doing today are the last 2 bullets. We're talking about the Fellows Program, and we're all our SIPPY Casts are part of our dissemination plan. Okay, so in 2022, we selected six fellows to be our initial candidates here, and you can see their names: Bethany, Buffy, Dee Dee, Emily, Eugene, and Michael. And you can see that they have different roles. Some are in administrative positions, like Dee Dee today. She's a vice president of workforce, and Emily is a dean of science. And you can see they're from all different parts of the United States. And here's their pictures. We like to promote them wherever possible. And in 2022, they were assigned mentors. So we have some esteemed mentors here: Dr. Marsha Pfeiffer, Dr. Deborah Bragg, Dr. Sunny Cook, Dr. Avis Proctor, and Dr. Mary Ostrey. They are been indispensable, and you'll hear a little bit later from the fellows themselves who have been working with our mentors. Okay, now for 2023 SIPPY STEM Fellows, there were 29 applicants and seven selected. So this is our newest group of fellows. And today we have on the call with us is Jason. And as I mentioned before, he's faculty and interim dean of STEM from St. Louis Community College. Karen Bridges is a faculty and department chair of physical sciences from Howard Community College in Maryland. Laurel Carpenter, faculty of environmental science from Holyoke Community College in Massachusetts. Latoya Chandler is a faculty of interdisciplinary science, Santa Fe College in Florida. And Allison Foster, faculty of anatomy and physiology, like I mentioned before, from Columbus State Community College in Ohio. And here are their nice photos, so you can recognize them if you see them on another Zoom call or if you see them at a conference. Okay, so now we want to spend the bulk of our time together talking with our four fellows, Dee Dee, Emily, Jason, and Allison. Dee Dee and Emily are from 2022, our first cohort, and Jason and Allison are from our second cohort in 2023. So I'm going to start with Dee Dee and ask her this first question. How did you hear about the SIPPY STEM Fellows Program? So just take yourself off mute and go.
Sure thing. Back in 2022, when the program was first kicking off, I got an email from my dean, and I followed the chain back up. And the dean had gotten it from the campus president, and the campus president had gotten it from, I'm assuming, some mailing list for the League for Innovation. It had come to her, and she passed it down to the dean. And the dean said, "Hey, I think you check the boxes. You're currently enrolled in a higher ed leadership a doctoral program." And it kind of went from there. I fit the profile for what they were the applicants, and so I applied.
Excellent. We're glad to have you, Jason. Okay, we're going to go back to cohort one. Emily, how did you hear about the Fellows Program?
Well, my time zone is good morning, and to those of you, good afternoon in the other time zones, since I'm in Arizona right now. So thank you for having us today, Dr. Hawthorne and the SIPPY STEM team. So how I heard about the SIPPY STEM Fellows Program is I received an email from the League for Innovation of Community Colleges. And as Jason said, I looked at it and I said, "Oh, this is my profile. I fit. This is one of my identities, right? I am an individual who has a STEM background. I am in community college leadership. As a dean of sciences, I want to continue to pursue higher ed leadership roles, and I'm in a doctoral program." And I put it aside and I thought, "Oh, I don't know if they'll pick me." And then I got another email, and I got another email. And one of those emails was from my dissertation director at Ferris State University. And she said, "Emily, I really think you need to consider this, that you have a strong opportunity." And at this point, after having several people reach out, I said, okay, I need to apply. I feel like I have a solid opportunity. And I was one of the lucky ones to be selected for cohort one.
We're glad you're here, Emily. Okay, Allison, we're going to go to you before we go back to Dee Dee. How did you hear about the Fellows Program?
Hello, everyone. Good morning or good afternoon. So I, similar to Emily, received an email. It actually came from my chairperson, and it was just a foreword. It said, this seems like something that you might be interested in. And it absolutely, it was one of those emails you got when you're sitting in your car getting ready to walk in the morning. So I was on my phone kind of frantically looking at the website and going, oh my goodness, like this sounds so perfect and so wonderful. But I was concerned that maybe I wasn't the best fit for the program, even though it looked like the program would be the best fit for me. So even just sitting there in my car, I emailed Dr. Agarwal with this probably frantic email of like, I'm so excited and this looks so wonderful, but I don't know if you want me. And he responded back almost immediately and encouraged me to keep looking into it and to apply and ask questions. And so that's really what gave me that push to apply for the program after I heard from it.
Excellent. You know, when we did this last year, very similar stories in that, this is exciting. I don't know if I fit the profile. Should I do it? Should I not? And it seems like when you get support from others, like another email, or just Dr. Agarwal saying, go for it and stuff like that. So it's very similar. So we're really glad that you decided to apply. Okay. Dee Dee, how's your audio?
Hopefully it's better. Okay, great. So I was blessed to have Dr. George Boggs as an instructor in a community college leadership program at Kansas State. And he was the one that he actually suggested we all apply for it, of course, being the supporter that he is. And, you know, it was the first time I'd ever seen a leadership fellowship around content area. I actually was an Aspen Presidential Fellow previously, but it was all about leadership, but it was in general. And I was really looking for an opportunity to expand my interests around STEM. And so it was a good fit. And I too, because I believe I am the oldest in the group, and I am sort of, I guess, past those formative years. I've got 28 years in higher education, and I did not think that it was going to be, I did not think I would be selected. I thought it would be some younger, more sciencey people that, you know, doing great things in science, but I was really, really blessed to be selected.
Wonderful. Very good. And your audio is crystal clear.
So awesome.
Thank you for whatever you did. It worked. Okay, so we're going to go to the next question, and whoever went last gets to go first. So, Dee Dee, we're back to you. Why did you decide to apply for the Fellows Program? I think you gave us a little bit of hint of that, but if you could expand on that, that would be great.
Well, and it's going to probably involve the next question, too. So the challenges that we're facing in Central Texas and that I work with on a regular basis is Central Texas is exploding with the semiconductor and tech industries. The largest international investment ever in the United States by Samsung, right there in my service area. 19 of our 21 school districts are rural. And I saw this as an opportunity for me to provide leadership to connect K-12 and colleges and universities in a seamless pipeline of STEM to be able to take. There's a lot of poverty in some of these rural communities, a lot of poverty and not a very strong college going culture. And I was really hoping I could leverage and have leveraged this opportunity to create an opportunity for these young people to come into a high demand, high wage field in the STEM areas. And so hopefully kind of eliminate the economic achievement gap of the community.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So we're going to go to cohort two. And Allison, why did you decide to apply for the Fellows Program?
So to share a little bit of my background, I have a PhD in anatomy, which supports my work as faculty. Primarily, my load is teaching anatomy and physiology classes for our community college students. But I have this desire to keep enriching my leadership and working in this pursuit to have a lifelong career at a community college, moving into more administrative roles. And so I started into a program at Kent State University for higher education, administration, and student affairs. And so in doing that, I felt like I was pursuing what I was interested in and kind of where my career goals are lying. But then I felt like that kind of fractured who I kind of my identity or my background, because then I have this STEM focus and that's what I do mostly in my job. But now I'm also working on that higher education, more of administration side. And looking at this program, it gives me a chance to bring those two things together. The other thing that was really attractive to me was just the sense of community. The mentorship program, although again, with cohort two, we're still working our way into that program, but that was really attractive to me. And I really enjoyed so far, even just having access to the two cohorts and having those group of like-minded people to be able to lean on as well.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. Emily, why did you decide to apply for the Fellows Program?
There's several reasons that I decided to apply. One is that I recognize that community college leaders, there's significant turnover happening in the near future. And being able to have that broad knowledge base of STEM focus, given what Dee Dee spoke to with the semiconductor industry booming and all of these opportunities, we keep speaking to the need for workforce opportunities, and yet many individuals in higher ed don't have that STEM background. Well, I do, but it was this opportunity, like Allison said, to merge leadership and STEM and create networking opportunities for me that connected nationwide, not just within the cohort, but also within the leadership team of the SIPI STEM leadership, the co-PIs. And so I have made great networks. So recently, George Boggs was at the League of Innovation and he saw my dissertation director and he's like, oh yeah, I know Emily. And never would I have imagined George Boggs would say, oh, I know who Emily is, right? And so it's that networking. It is that connection. And so much of community colleges, we're a big network, but we're small, right? And so those are some of the opportunities. And frankly, I've been paying out of pocket for my doctoral program. My husband and I have not taken out a single loan. And so the incentive of the honorarium was also attractive. It was that little bonus is how I will put it. So.
Very good. And we'll be talking about the honorarium when we get to the slides on how to apply. But that's a great point. Thank you, Emily. Okay. Last but not least, who am I forgetting? Who didn't go yet? Jason, right?
Yep, that's me.
Why did you decide to apply, Jason?
Well, truth be told, I actually applied for the first cohort of the SIPI STEM Fellows and was not selected. So kudos to Emily and Dee Dee for getting selected in that group. I was not dismayed and applied again for the second round of the fellowship. And yes, all of the pieces were very attractive to me, not only the networking, but also the mentorship and professional development, the financial support, and not only the financial support in the honorarium, but, you know, after we got accepted and was kind of laid out some of the expectations of the fellows, you know, getting the support not to also go to the ATEPI conference in Washington, D.C. in October of this year. You know, looking forward to that, you know, networking, just developing as a leader so I can better serve my institution.
Very good. And I want to go back to Dr. George Boggs. So I know Emily keeps talking about Dr. George Boggs. Dr. George Boggs was a former president and CEO of the American Association for Community Colleges. He also is a president of a Community College out west, and we are very fortunate to have him as a co-principal investigator, co-PI of the SIPI STEM project. Okay, now we're going on to our third question. And so Jason, right, you'll be first since you were last. Describe the focus of your STEM education research, if you have any planned presentations or publications in the works.
My dissertation topic is focusing on student-centered teaching practices, flipped teaching specifically, in higher ed developmental math courses. I'm currently wrapping up the proposal, so I'm not quite to the presentation publication part yet, but I would love to share my research. I mean, pending the outcome, would love to share my research on, getting some more innovative teaching in the STEM areas, because everything I've been doing for the literature review suggests that it's impactful for students, for your institution. There are some kinks that need to be worked out, maybe with, faculty are hesitant to do anything innovative because, you've got these student evaluations of instruction that are a lot of times required of institutions. And sometimes those questions don't lend themselves to being innovative in the classroom based on the way the questions read and how the students might answer them. And depending on the weight that institutions carry for those evaluations in terms of promotion and things like that, it could make faculty members, hesitant to make those changes that might benefit students. So that's where I'm at. That's what I am researching.
Okay. Sounds good. I'm going to ask you a follow-up question, because I was a community college educator 30 years. And once I got tenure, I kind of moved into that innovation thing because I knew I kind of had security and didn't have to worry about those course evaluations as much, right? Plus I had experience. So I'm going to hearken us back to the pandemic years, the 2020, 2021, when everybody had split second, go to online teaching, right? So that almost forced some innovation. And I know a lot of my colleagues kind of flipped their classroom when they went online. So can you speak a little bit about that, if that's part of your research and, in flipping the classroom online?
If it's an online synchronous course, I guess it would function very similar to like a face-to-face synchronous course. But, the way that, I have flipped my classroom is, I will assign videos for students to watch that cover the content as a part of their out of class work for the class. And when they come into class, I have a short 5-question, half-page questionnaire over the content that they watched. And they're allowed to use whatever notes they took while watching the videos to answer these questions. My goal is that everybody gets a perfect score on these, quizzes, because really it's just a checkup to see whether or not they, engage with that material outside of class. And then that leaves a lot of time in the class for me to shorten. I usually do a little wrap-up mini lecture just to make sure everybody's on the same page. But then it leaves a lot of time in the classroom for active learning, discovery learning, group work, and things like that, which allow students to kind of get into the material in whatever discipline that you're in, to experience it in a way that's going to be more meaningful and more impactful. And there's a lot of interesting articles out there. I shouldn't go down that rabbit hole, but Dr. Hawthorne, did I answer your question, or would you like me to go further?
That sounds great. Perfect. Okay. Appreciate that. Okay. I know all of us are kind of struggling. I teach also part-time, but I'm always struggling with how to teach an online course. Ours is a blended course that I teach. So most of it is in Canvas, and we meet once a week. And so I do similar stuff that you do, Jason, make sure. Together in the synchronous mode through Zoom. Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to go to Emily now. And so can you describe the focus of your STEM education research, and if you had any planned presentations and publications? you're from cohort one, so you may be a little further down the line than Jamie.
Yeah, so I have an NSF STEM grant in conjunction with the University of Arizona. I'm actually at a conference yesterday and today. We presented yesterday on the grant, and my research is an extension of this work. I am in the IRB process, so I will talk about that work. But we've as I said, presented here. We actually also presented on the grant at the AACNU STEM conference in November, right around the time of the ATE conference as well. And I'll just do a quick few touch points on this. We embed culturally responsive mentoring training for faculty at both the community college and at the University of Arizona. And that's going to be where my focus is on that piece. And the intention of the grant is to work on bridging students from one cultural institution to another cultural institution to increase persistence and transfer of academically talented, low-income, diverse students interested within the STEM field. Nationwide, we have, many of you are probably aware, about 40% of community college students in STEM actually do transfer. And our grant has us at 98% of our students are transferring, and 97% of them are persisting. And the graduation rates look quite good in this as well. And so we're very proud of this grant. And as the extension of this grant is my research focus, which is going to be looking at the lived experiences of the community college faculty mentors, both during and after. So what I'm really looking for is, did the culturally responsive mentoring shift something such that they went into the classroom and then change their curriculum? Did they then change how they interact with students? Maybe showing diverse role models, maybe they changed their syllabi, you know, there's a variety of things. So I'm looking at artifacts, but what was the impact of that training outside of the grant?
Fantastic. That sounds actually very important work and very exciting work. When do you think you'll have some preliminary results to share from your
later
research?
This year, my goal is to be done by December. And so I'm right now on that IRB process. And so the target is December. And I realize I forgot to mention this. My goal is to start doing some planned presentations, publications within by no later than the next year.
Fantastic. And can you talk a little bit about the IRB process? And since you're working with faculty members, so you're using human subjects.
Correct.
So you have to get that cleared. So if you can just talk a little bit about that, that would be helpful.
Yes. So the IRB process, I am required to do IRB, of course, through my research / home institution, as I'll put it, my doctoral program. And that requires submitting documentation of the letters, or not the letters, excuse me, the interview questions, and how you're recruiting and how you're sampling and selecting. And they really want to ensure that, because of the human subject piece, as Dr. Hawthorne mentioned, that you're not inflicting any harm or causing questions that could cause some kind of a psychological damage. I also have to go through IRB through my work institution, since the community college faculty work at Pima as well. And you have to, another component, I am their boss, right? And so there's this piece that I have to bring into the IRB process, is how, as an authority figure, this will potentially impact them, or the considerations I have to think through as well. So did that answer your question, Dr. Hawthorne?
It sure did. You have a double whammy IRB. I had to do one IRB. So
yes,
good luck with that.
Thank you.
You're going to become the IRB expert that people are going to be going to in the future.
Quite possibly.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Let's go to cohort two and Allison. describe the focus of your STEM education research. I think you gave us a little hint about that, and if you have any planned presentations or publications in the works.
Yes, so I'm at a slightly different phase in my journey here. So my dissertation research was looking at blended active learning, a model very similar to the flipped classroom that Jason's working with, but specifically at a four-year institution that had undergraduate institution or undergraduate students rather, and professional dental students, and really looking at how to approach the lecture portion of anatomy course to prepare students for the interactive laboratories. Now, I will also admit that was before the pandemic. So it was before we had access to a lot of these online teaching tools that we have now, and before students were really comfortable using those or interacting with those. So a lot of my outcomes was even just looking at their success of being able to do those things in a virtual format, which now, luckily, we have more tools. It's a completely different landscape. Heading into my career at the community college, I also work with a grant that incorporates work-based learning to help students that are interested in getting a good STEM foundation at the community college before transferring to a four-year program. So the more recent presentations I've been doing is sharing our progress and disseminating some of our outcomes with that. I actually had the great fortune of meeting Emily at that AACNU Transforming STEM Higher Education Conference as one of my colleagues and I were sharing that work. So a lot of what I'm doing right now, combining my STEM background and my research background and now my graduate program, is seeing how I incorporate all of those pieces into my practice to keep furthering the work that we're doing.
Great. Do you have any publications since you know mentioned you already have a PhD or?
So I actually do not have any publications because I finished my PhD like weeks before the pandemic hit. So my focus then as a full-time faculty, I know I don't have to tell any of you, but my focus completely shifted to, okay, how are we now serving these students that need our time? So I do not have publications, but I have been putting out a lot of presentations and look forward to continue to add to the body of research in the future.
Fantastic. Yeah, the pandemic just kind of wobbled the earth on its axis, right? We're all kind of tilted and we're just kind of getting back to some form of normalcy. Totally Absolutely. Understandable. Okay, thank you. Okay, last but not least, Dee Dee, describe the focus of your STEM education research. I know you kind of hinted about that. If you had any presentations or got any in the hopper and any publications.
So yes, I've probably given four or five large presentations over this last year, specifically dedicated to developing rural pathways around STEM. That is pretty much the focus of my work right now. And I'm actually leveraging those relationships with our industry partners as well. Just to give you a IRB is an interesting subject across the board. So additionally to being Vice President of Workforce Development, I am the Institutional Research Effectiveness and Planning Officer for the college. And so we now have implemented this year a new IRB because of this process. We also have really embraced undergraduate research. And I can't tell you what my designation as a SIPI STEM fellow has done for on-campus relationships. When I came on board 2.5 years ago, there was this thought that I was workforce and I had nothing to do with the academic side of the house. Even though I had several academic areas under me, including engineering technology, I still was sort of discounted in that way, that I was just working with industry and I had nothing to do with the higher education portion of it. And that designation basically got me an audience with our STEM folks, our science. Specifically, we have a very, very strong science department with a heavy research background. And I was able to work with them on a new IRB process. And in addition to that, we also have done something I don't think anybody else is doing. And the academic side, meaning not liberal arts, they are now trying to identify industry credentials, STEM-related credentials that is related that they can embed in their programs, at least as co-curricular, because so many of our students work, and quite frankly, they work at Subway or or Jack in the Box, and that's nothing wrong with that. But when you are planning to endure a liberal arts education and have multiple degrees ahead, why don't we try to get them something that they can work locally and support themselves? So we have had some really rich conversations across the board with STEM, not just workforce, but also on the academic side, those that are intending to transfer. Also, a couple I presented at Achieving the Dream this last year. It was a featured spotlight presentation specifically around developing rural pathways and the challenges with regards to resources and the culture and support for those types of things. So the I guess probably the bigger thing that I'm right in the middle of right now is we have brought on a community education coordinator and created between March and August, there will be 84 STEM camps at three different locations. We're about a third of the way through those. Some of them are in the evening. Every Saturday is a STEM Saturday somewhere. Through the summer, it's week long at three different locations. And a mobile STEM lab that was supported. All of these are funded by philanthropy and external partners, business and industry. So this designation of the fellowship, being a fellow, has created an opportunity for me to leverage that and get people to the table to further this whole STEM education across the pipeline.
That's very impressive. All those STEM Saturdays in particular, and you have your mobile lab and all that. So I also like that idea of having some kind of credential if you're doing liberal arts, you know, so that you can do something that pays a little bit more than working at Jack in the Box, as you said. And in the cyber field, in my field, we have a lot of industry certifications, like entry level, like CompTIA is one of them. So I think that's a great idea. So because you were last, now you're going to be first, DD, right?
Yes.
How do you like being part of the SIPPI STEM Fellows? And I believe you have a mentor. So if you could speak a little bit about that experience, that would be helpful.
I do. I have the best mentor. I don't know what the rest of your experiences were, but Dr. Avis Proctor has been my mentor. And I tell you, we regularly had every month we had a call set up. There were a couple of months that got rocky when I was sick for a period of time, but saw her out and she immediately connected to me every time we would see each other. But on the calls, y'all, I'm sorry, I'm from Texas. Y'all, the first 20 minutes was all business about how's your STEM, how's your, you know, fellowship research going. And then we just had conversations about leadership, specifically around what was keeping me up at night, what was keeping her up at night. And I never left the call without at least three, either individuals to go find and talk to, or an individual to research, or an article to go research, or a book to go read, specifically around whatever was keeping me up at night. She's an amazing, amazing leader and is so, so willing to share everything that she has, knowledge, experience. And so, I loved it. I've thoroughly enjoyed being part of the program. It's kind of weird because I know I'm like nearing the end of that. And I feel like the wheels are just now turning. I feel like we're just now starting to get momentum. So I'm going to keep using that, whether I'm no longer a fellow or not, because it's really something to be proud of.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And I lived in Texas for about 2 years in junior high, so no problem. Okay, so why don't we go to Allison in cohort two. And how do you like being part of the SIPPI STEM Fellows? I know you just joined recently, so go for it.
Yes, so I will fully acknowledge that I'm new to the party, but I've been loving it so far. Even just like we've mentioned a few times here, building a network, having folks that you know that you can reach out to when you have a question and they will get right back to you and help. I've also really enjoyed hearing the experience of Dee Dee and Emily, so seeing what the future holds for us as well.
Wonderful. Excellent. Okay. Emily, how have you liked being part of the fellows for about 2 years now? And I believe you have a mentor as well. I don't know if you have the best mentor, but you and Dee Dee can duke that out.
I'm actually good. I realize I forgot something about the last question. So I just had a publication associated with the grant in the League of Innovation for this month. It's an innovation abstract about the STEM grant. So I realize I forgot to mention that. And while it's not exactly my research, it is connected to my research. And so to actually answer this question now, I have very much appreciated this opportunity. As Dee Dee said, feel very blessed to be part of the community and the connections and the networking. The opportunity to go to the ATE conference last November, which is an expectation of the SIPPI STEM Fellows, created that networking. It gave me greater insight into ATE. I was familiar with it. And looking at ways to broaden my own experience with ATE right now. The other thing that I would add is, of course, being mentored. I don't know if I have the best mentor compared to Dee Dee, but I have an excellent mentor. It is Dr. Mary Oster. I might have mispronounced her last name. If I did, apologies. And she's just simply wise. She has an extensive wealth of information and has we've really looked at this more in terms of my own leadership development and moving upwards in community college leaders. And so last year, in fact, she helped me prepare for some interviews that went extremely well. And just having me think about what I need to do to help further my own career. So again, that wisdom that she imparts has been very valuable.
Very good. I know the almost all of cohort one was at the ATEPI conference last October, and you all looked like you were having a great time. So it was very, I know we got some cohort pictures and stuff. Okay. Jason, how do you like being part of the fellows program? And I don't think you quite have a mentor yet. We're working on that for you.
That is correct. It's been great so far. The connections that we've, you know, made, we already had like our intro call where there were some of cohort one, some of cohort two there, getting to know the other fellows. I feel like I'm on, you know, the upward trajectory because, you know, I'm going to be getting that mentor soon. And, you know, that's, I think, going to propel things a little bit. And then I don't remember what I was doing yesterday, but I was starting to look at my fall as things are starting to wrap up in the spring. I was starting to look at my fall calendar and, you know, looking at the ATEPI conference, and, you know, kind of putting that on my calendar. And it, I don't know, it makes it a little bit more real once it gets on the calendar, you know? And just thinking about like going there and, you know, that experience and how that's going to look. I actually started looking at the old conference agenda from last year, just seeing like the types of things that were on there since it's a conference I've never been to, and, you know, just getting general excitement about, you know, what this is going to bring over the next couple months.
Very good. Okay. You were the last, so now you're the first. What advice would you give, Jason, to someone who's considering applying for cohort three of the Fellows Program?
Absolutely do it. And if they turn you down, do it again.
You can speak from experience. Okay.
Maybe just a tad of experience there.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Dee Dee, are you still on?
Yes, I am. I was having power issues. Hopefully I can keep going.
Okay, go for it.
So I'm assuming I'm the last question.
Yes. What advice would you give someone who's considering applying for the next cohort of the fellows?
I would say go for it, number one. And number two, take advantage of the co-PIs and the teachers and all that are involved in this. Dr. Tellez has sent me She has sent me multiple emails with, I mean, just exactly the information that she saw out that I needed to move things forward. So I say, take advantage of every opportunity that you can. You're never going to find these individuals as supportive around you at one time as you will in this program.
Thank you, Dee Dee. And I'll say thank you on behalf of the whole SIPI co-PI and leadership team. Thank you. And we didn't pay you to say that, right?
Is
that
you right? Didn't. You, oh, did, okay. Not. You did not.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, Allison, what advice would you give someone who is considering applying for the next cohort of the Fellows Program?
Okay, I'm going to be the third person to say it, but just do it. I was admitting to Dr. Hawthorne at the beginning of this call that I easily watched the recording of this call from last year 5 times because I kept going back and forth of like, am I a good fit? Should I do it? And it was listening to this call of hearing everybody say, just apply, that finally pushed me to write everything up and hit the submit button. And truly, as you're going through, if you're having those doubts, if you're having those questions, reach out to the contacts that are available here and listed on the website. Everyone here is so supportive, and they'll be willing to also answer any questions you have or meet any concerns you have. So truly, just apply.
Okay. So we're 3 for 3. Just do it. Okay. So Emily, are you going to join the chorus, or do you have some other words of wisdom?
I will be joining the chorus and say, just do it. And don't listen to the second voice you tell yourself, right? The first voice tells you to do it. And the second voice says, don't put it aside. I don't fit. I don't belong. And don't let that voice be the one to stop you from doing it, right? So go with the first voice that is telling you to apply. Ashok was, he received so many emails from me when I was in the application process, getting clarifying questions, right? And he was extremely responsive. So if you have questions, reach out. Allison said the same thing, right? And Dee Dee said that the SIPI STEM team is extremely supportive. I would have to echo that and amplify that statement. Everyone is very supportive. They want to see you succeed. And so they want to help develop you as a leader. And so listen to the first voice, not your second voice.
Great advice. It's like the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other. Don't listen to that devil, right? So fantastic. Okay. So let me pause there. Before we go on to how do you apply, are there any questions from the audience for our fellows? Are there any questions? If you want to put that in the chat, I'll be checking the chat. Any questions?
I don't see any.
Yeah, I don't see any either. Well, as an instructor, you have to count to 20. Yeah. Okay. As an instructor, you have to like count the 20 in your head, right? Before you move on, when you say, are there any questions? So I was at 15 seconds, Ashok. But anyway, feel free, if you think of a question, to put it in the chat. I'll be looking at that as Ashok talks about the Fellows Program.
Good. Thank you, Beth. I think you all have heard about the program from our four fellows. They did a fantastic job of kind of summarizing what the fellows program is about and how they're liking it and what activities they have been involved in. Rather than repeating what they have said or what is already on the website that you see the website address, ccpistem.org/a-mentoring-program, it has all the information that you will need. No matter what I say right now, in 2, 3, 4 months, you're likely to forget that. So you'll have to review the website anyway. So I will encourage you to look at the website. I want to highlight 3 things about this program right now, which is not necessarily on the slides. In the spirit of continuous improvement, we have made some changes in the program from first to the second and now to the third cohort. The first change we have made is we have opened this up to academics and folks who are working in the industry. You heard several of the fellows talk about the connection with business and industry, and we are finding people from industry also wanting to move into community college administrative arena. So we want to provide them that opportunity. Second thing I want to emphasize that this, as the objective of the ATE program is, this CCPI STEM fellows, they're looking for individuals who are doing research, definitely on the doctoral level in academics, but also it can be expanded into workforce area. So your research activities can be either in academic or in the workforce area. So I would like for you to remember that it is open for people in the industry as well as open for research in the workforce. The third thing I want to mention, which is not written any place, as Emily and I believe Didi both mentioned, that they would like to find ways to continue on beyond their two-year fellowship, which gets over. We are exploring the possibility of designating some sort of title. Titles come free, you know. So we are looking at giving them some sort of title as ambassadors of CCPI STEM fellows or something like that. And we are still in the early stages of deciding that, but keep your ears and eyes open and you may hear more about that in the coming weeks. So Beth, if you can quickly, I know we are running out of time. If you want to quickly go to the next slide, next one. So applicants must. The one I want to emphasize is it was mentioned earlier, honorarium. So it does come with $5,000 annually, which is for each year, depending upon if your fellowship continues on for the second year. Essentially, it's not free money, but it's something that helps, that can help you do what you want to do. And essentially, you must demonstrate interest in community college and workforce area, and you can read all of that in the on the website. The process is very simple. If everything is online, essentially what we want you to do is apply by September 20th. That's the deadline, and we want to adhere to that as strictly as possible. We have also made some changes in the application process. In the first go-around, we had sort of two-part application. Then second go-around, we also had two-part, but now all the application is one time and has three parts. First part is demographic information, things that you normally see associated with demographic. And also we want to know what is your proposed graduate degree program and institution where you're working on. Second part is a series of statements that we want you to write in your application. Why do you want to be considered for CCPI fellow? We strongly believe that we need to expand the STEM field, STEM workforce with all the for everybody, for all. So we want to hear your views on diversity, equity, and inclusion of how you see that in this STEM forum and what activities you have been involved in these arenas to support DEI expansion. And lastly, how your value, but how do you value the leadership to advance the accomplishment of the project? So that's the second part. And lastly, we want a support letter from your institution. We want to make sure that you have the institutional support to participate in that. And also along with it, two letters of references. So it's a very straightforward application process. Everything is online. You can submit the application online. It's a template that you can find on the website. And that is about all, I think. Beth, I can answer any questions.
Yeah. Any questions? And I just want to let you know to check back in June. I'm working with the developer now to get that online application form ready. So as Ashok mentioned, we're making a few little changes. So it's right in the web development phase right now. So at this point, we'll see if there's any questions. And I'm also going to launch a poll. So if you could take a few minutes to answer these poll questions, we would really appreciate that.